Welcome and thank you all for standing by. At this time, all participants are on a listen-only mode. During the question and answer session, please press star 1 on your touch-tone phone to ask a question. Today's conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. I'd now like to turn the call over to Mr. Nish Acharya. Thank you. You may begin.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the 2012 I-6 Challenge open question and answer session. We've put together some senior folks here from the Economic Development Administration to take your questions and to give you some answers as possible. I should note that we had some technical glitches on this end, so please bear with us if you can't hear or if something doesn't come through. And then secondly, some of these questions will need to be answered directly at the regional level. So if you're not entirely comfortable with the answer received here, certainly double check with your region. And they'll be able to give you more additional information. So with that, I'd like to suggest to the operator if you could let people ask questions and we can start to answer them.
Thank you. At this time, if you would like to ask a question, please press star and then 1 on your touch-tone phone. Please make sure your phone is unmuted. Record your name clearly when prompted so I may introduce you for your question. Again, to ask a question, press star 1 and record your name when prompted. One moment, please. Like we do have some coming in the queue right now. Take me just one moment. Please stand by. Our first question comes from Joe Wallach. Your line is open, and please state your organization.
CVEP, that's Coachella Valley Economic Partnership. And my question is there anywhere online that we can have a look at the winning and the non-winning proposals from the years 2010 and 2011?
Unfortunately, we don't have access to that due to a combination of technical challenges as well as we do not share the details of applications from the past with the general public. Certainly, if you're an organization that applied in the past, we can look for your application and talk to you individually about comments and thoughts from the previous application, but we're not sharing the applications in bulk. One of the things I would suggest is that our previous I-6 winners have been very supportive of the concept and willing to work with applicants. And so on the EDA website, if you go to eda.gov/challenges/I-6, there is a map with the previous winners, and I think you can contact them, the ones that you think may be most relevant to your application. And if you need contact information, feel free to email us at i6@eda.gov, and we can connect you with that region.
Okay, thank you.
We have a question from Alex Tang. Your line is open.
Hi, this is Alex Tang from the Clean Energy Trust. One of the questions that we had was with respect to the region for eligibility determination. How granular can we get with the data? For example, you think from high to low, state down to county, down to city, down to zip code or continuous zip codes, just because we need to be able to answer the response of the different criteria stated. Thank you.
Thanks for that question. So I'm going to turn it over to Hillary Sherman, who's with the EDA Policy and National Programs Office and is a real expert on this. So, Hillary?
So thanks for your question. So the answer is it's really up to you. We ask that the data come from a federal source if it is available. Our regulations give preference to the American Community Survey in first order, BEA or BLS, and kind of in that order. As you know, if you go to different data sources, you can actually pull down the data at a variety of geographic levels. So you can get it for the county, you can get it for multi-county, you can get it for zip, you can get it for census tracts. And it really becomes incumbent upon you to identify not only which area in your region might be eligible, but also if you're going to claim an area as eligible, to document how the proposed project is going to be able to benefit that distressed community. So if you can make that case for a census tract, so be it. If you can make that case for a multi-county region, so be it.
Hillary, just to clarify, BEA and BLS are
Bureau of Economic Analysis and Bureau of Labor Statistics. All of those are essentially census.gov. If you go to census, you can click on there's an ACS or American Community Survey link on that where you can go and get the most current information, or you can go to BLS.gov and get the information.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
We have a question from Julie Fernbach. Your line is open. Your line is open. Please check your mute button. We'll go on to the next question. David Cohen, your line is open.
Yes, thank you. I have a question concerning form CD-511. It requires an award number to be completed. What would we fill in that box for the award number?
Just hit NA or fill out NA in that box. If the project is funded, the project officer will actually fill it out post-award.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Absolutely.
Our next question comes from Malaita Ellen. Your line is open.
Yes, thank you. My question concerns program eligibility and purpose, which is to commercialize, et cetera, et cetera. However, funding what may be awarded by this grant may not be directly or indirectly allocated to commercial entities. So please, if you can, fill me in on the missing link there. I understand how this seeming contradiction might work within a university structure. But without a university structure, for private entities who are seeking the services of this potential POC center, would they receive mentoring, et cetera, but not seed funding?
I'm going to introduce Jamie Lipsey, who's our legal counsel here for Economic Development Administration, to answer that question.
Hi, yes, the key distinction for what sort of assistance can be provided to private entities rests on technical assistance. So yes, mentoring, yes, helping them out in the commercialization process, but so the key is just technical assistance, no direct financial assistance. Is that answering your question?
May one then budget into the grant request funding for the mentoring, et cetera, as you mentioned, for these private entities?
Yes. That would sort of come in under the services that the Proof of Concept Center provides, and I think would come in under, wouldn't be contractual, but just personnel or salary.
Yeah. So basically, if you look at the FFO on page 11, it outlines the eligibility requirements. Section 3A, EDA has to make an award to one of the five institutions outlined in that list there. As you'll note, as you mentioned, for-profit entities are not in that list, so we cannot make the award directly to that for-profit entity. However, many times for-profit entities are indirectly kind of benefiting from this and are seen as beneficiaries of the EDA award or might be seen as are able to apply as a contractor if they go through all the appropriate procurement procedures. And all that is available if you have an institutional grants office or institutional contract office. They often will have all the information in terms of what's required for compliance with procurement procedures.
And this would be a for-profit being a contract partner of the institution that applies.
And in such a case, it would be put under the contract line item of the budget.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Our next question comes from Michael Ehrlich. Your line is open.
Hi, this is Michael Ehrlich from the New Jersey Institute of Technology, and I have a couple of small questions and maybe a slightly larger one. The first one is what is the competition identification number? And I'm trying to figure if that's the same as the federal opportunity number. And then the second small question, actually, well, maybe not as small, is related to Section A in grants.gov, where we talk about what kind of a center it is that might fall into more than one category. you know, we obviously are a university, so we could be categorized as a university center, but it might also be categorized under economic adjustment. I'm trying to figure out how to make that decision.
Yeah.
And the third one, which I'm going to sneak in there, is kind of a bigger question, but you talk about applicant versus partner, and I guess I'm trying to understand exactly what that difference is.
Okay, so I'm going to answer the first two, and I'll turn to Jamie for the third one. So the first question is about the funding opportunity number.
Yep.
That's on page 17, an item 5 in the list. So it's I-6-2012. If you enter
okay.
that in grants.gov, you should be able to pull it up.
So, and that's where it says competition identification number. That's the federal. What I should put in is the funding opportunity number.
Yes.
Great. Perfect.
And your second question, sorry.
The second question was related to Section A and how to categorize the...
You want to mark this as an economic adjustment program.
Great. Okay, thank you. That was
that's
the second one. Great. And then the third one was about the applicant versus partner distinction.
So your this is Jamie. So your applicant versus partner, any applicant, co-applicant needs to be an eligible recipient of EDA funds. So when you sign on... when you sign on as a recipient, you have to be eligible, and you're a recipient under the award. So you're sort of
right.
You're in privity with EDA. Partners, in general, to be a partner, you could be an eligible recipient or not. You're supporting the award in some sense, but if in general, partners are not receiving funding under the award.
So maybe providing match, but not necessarily providing.
Right.
Or receiving funds.
Right. You're not, you may be providing match to the recipient or proposing to provide match to the eligible applicant, but you're not going to be a direct recipient of the EDA funding.
So an appropriate person might be, for instance, one of our small SBIR awardee companies might be a great partner for this, but wouldn't be the applicant or recipient of direct funds, except through maybe an additional SBIR supplement.
Right, and the regional office can really help you sort of suss out. So each situation is going to be different. So your regional office can help sort of suss out, the unique situation.
Perfect. Thank you.
Sure.
Our next question comes from Allison Baranowski. Your line is open.
Hi, this is Allison Baranowski from Jumpstart, and our question relates to: are there any restrictions on our organization as a main applicant, but also partnering with another organization's application?
So being a part of two applications?
Correct.
No, there's no prohibition about that. We would just encourage applicants to remember that the EDA does strive for geographic diversity and diversity in its organizational type in making awards. So,
if I may ask a question, which I think will be useful for the group, to the caller, is this a Jumpstart site in different cities, or is this the headquarters site?
It's the headquarters site, which is our only site. We're just partnering with another institution in our region.
Okay. So we can move to the next question.
We have a question from Walt Borland. Your line is open.
Thank you. Walt Borland with NIREC. On page 16 of the app, in the first bullet point, you mentioned that you're seeking a resolution or letter from a general purpose subdivision. How is this different from either a commitment letter or a letter of support?
Well, this is an eligibility requirement, so this only applies to nonprofit applicants. And under EDA's statute, nonprofits need to show they're working in cooperation with a general purpose subdivision of a state. So, a city, a county, town, right, letter showing that you have the support of that local government.
And could that be when you say subdivision of the government of the state, so it could be a state department or state agency?
No. It needs to be sort of the local jurisdiction. However, notice that footnote at the bottom. So if you've got a project of regional scope, will consider waiving the requirement. So reach out to your local regional contact to kind of discuss your situation.
This is Delal Warden, also counselor for EA. The general purpose subdivision, in terms of local government, is defined as you're looking at generally a geographic entity rather than an administrative body. So it would be if there's an incorporated town or an incorporated city, you should be seeking the information from them. If the jurisdiction is not incorporated, then you'd be looking to the county government for that documentation.
Very good. Thank you.
You're welcome.
We have a question from Julie Fernbach. Your line is open. Your line is open. Please check your mute button.
Perhaps we can come back.
I'm sorry, we're unable to hear you. Our next question is from Joseph James. Your line is open.
Good afternoon. I want to compliment EDA for the I-6 programs, and I'd like you to both remind me of the various related solicitations that you've had this year so far, and because it takes quite a while to put together the appropriate partnerships, are you anticipating issuing any additional solicitations this year or for the next in the next 6 months or so?
Well, I'll take this at a very high level. So the I will say this about the time for the partnerships. Generally, we've had a lot of applicants over the years who are leveraging existing partnerships to pull these proof of concept centers together. So the application period this year was actually very similar to previous years for the I-6. And so while it's always better to have more time to find more partners, I think we believe there's a lot of strong applications coming together based on historical relationships. Secondly, with EDA, the Jobs and Innovation Accelerator Challenge just closed, and that's always been seen as a very similar yet different grant opportunity that focuses on assisting companies and regions to develop their regional innovation strategies. And that just completed. And secondly, earlier this year, we ran something called the Rural Jobs and Innovation Accelerator Challenge, which was focused similarly on assisting companies and regions with a focus on rural parts of the country. At this point, I will defer to Hillary and Jamie about future solicitations that are coming up in this space.
I would say kind of as a general rule, it's probably a good idea to look at the body of work EDA has done this year and to project and anticipate that we might do something similar next year. The other thing I would draw your attention to is EDA has an FFO out called the EDAP FFO, which is for our Public Works and Economic Adjustment Program. While it is different in that it's a quarterly cycle competition that is not inherently focused on proof of concept centers, applications that come in with multi-partnerships focused on innovative techniques that can drive regional prosperity and really create jobs would be competitive under that program. And so if you're not able to meet the application deadline for the I-6, you might also want to peruse that application and consider reaching out to your regional office representative and submitting an application for that. There are the next deadline is September, I want to say 9th. That deadline might be a couple days either way, but it's right around the 9th of September. So, you know, if you can't make it in for this one, there's another one shortly thereafter.
And the university centers?
That one is run on a kind of, it's kind of interesting. It's run on the basis where two of our regions compete every year. They are moving to a five-year cycle. Next year it should be Austin and Denver, I think, that are competing. I'm not 100% sure, but I think that's two regions that they're competing. That FFO is available on our website, and generally that FFO is very similar year to year, recognizing that the geographic area that's open for the competition changes, and the regions that would be eligible to compete next year are noted in this year's FFO. So if you are a university and you are interested in that, it definitely is worth going ahead to take a look at that. But I can't stress enough how important the multi-partnerships are for all of EDA's programs. And again, you know, if you have a strong partnership that's really able to create jobs and really lead to strong regional prosperity, it's going to be usually competitive under many of our competitions. So you might want to look at multiple competitions if we're not able to get application in by the I-6 deadline.
Our next question comes from Keith Aspinall. Your line is open.
Hi, I'm from Arizona State University. I just had two technical questions on the narrative. I wanted to confirm that the table of contents does count towards the 15-page page limit, and I know other federal agencies, anything with like tables, charts, graphics, are not restricted to like the double spacing. And I wanted to make sure that was the same for EDA for this application, where if we're doing something in a chart specifically, it doesn't need to be double spaced.
Sorry, we're just double-checking the FFO real quick.
Okay.
So on page 14 of the FFO, the project narrative must be no more than 15 double-spaced pages. It has to be 11-point font.
Right.
And the scope of work project narrative must include the sub-bullets identified there. So those sub-bullets would count towards that.
Okay. Yeah, I was reading that. I just wanted to make sure because I wanted to double-check that. And then also just the standard on particularly charts, since that will be, you know, done in a in Word or whatever, and I know other federal agencies don't require anything in charts to be double-spaced, even
right.
If, like, the rest of the narrative is double-spaced, and I wanted to, if we don't need a double-spaced charts, that, you know, frees up more space, and I want to see if
right.
that is...
One thing to think about is that in this, the sub-bullets under the narrative, it's not asking specifically for charts. It means asking for plans and milestones, metrics, that kind of stuff, which all could be narrative,
uh-huh.
and a specific Gantt chart could be provided as an addenda to the application, and that could be separate, and that would not count towards the 15 pages.
Okay.
We do not encourage large addendas, however.
Yes.
All right.
If you can't say it concisely, usually you might need a little bit more work to try to say it better or try to get your idea fleshed out.
Okay.
Sorry.
Thank you.
Sorry.
We have a question from Richard Miller. Your line is open.
Thank you, and good afternoon. Thank you for the opportunity to ask questions. I'm with the AAGV in Baltimore. And I just have some very brief questions on the ED-900 A11 with the compliance with the executive order for the single point of contact. We did contact our individual, and they said to submit the application, and then they would actually get the application 5 to 7 days afterwards. Is this permissible in terms of the qualification for the application to be reviewed?
Absolutely. I think the thing that we would say is just if you could get an email or something indicating that and just submit that as part of your application, then we're good to go.
Okay, so I can just put that in where, I guess, Section D, if the answer is no, just to put it in there at that point?
Right, and we just we would need to see it in writing.
Okay,
so,
I just have two other questions. We are looking at doing an economic adjustment grant for the September deadline. Can we utilize the same letters of both match and support for both grants?
No, because if you were to, that would imply that there was a duplication of the project, and EDA does not fund multiple projects that essentially have overflows or overlapping scopes of work or scopes of budget. So each separate project that we would review would need to have a separate scope of work, a separate budget, and a separate match associated. However, if you were to submit a project for the I-6 and you were not selected, then you could definitely use, you know, it might need to be adjusted as appropriate, but you could submit a scope of work, a budget, and a match requirement that would be similar or very close to what you submitted under the I-6 under our regular September deadline.
Okay. And then just one real quick last question, which may be helpful to others. As we're combining the PDF files for the project narrative, for the bios, and for the budget narrative, et cetera, should those be for the project narrative, we have no more than 15 pages, but the others just be all put in one PDF file or for separate PDF files with an attachment?
Are you talking about the project narrative, the biography, the matching share, all of that as one document versus separate?
Yes. I believe they are separate. The project narrative is the 15 pages, and then the bios are the next section, and those bios are to be placed into the appendix?
So the directions on page 14 on top of that says that all of those sub-bullets should be submitted as one PDF to Grant Thornton.
Okay. Right. So we do the 15-page narrative, and then in addition to that, add the bios and the letters of support all in one PDF file, correct?
Yes, sir.
Excellent. Thank you very much for your answers. I appreciate that.
Our next question comes from Lisa Camp. Your line is open.
Hi. Thank you for the, taking time with us. Three questions. The first, do we need to double space the executive summary?
So on page 14, because the executive summary is part of the project narrative, and because the requirements specify the project narrative must be 15 pages, 11-point font, that is double-spaced. It must be double-spaced.
Okay, great. Second question: Does a university have to do the same forms that as a nonprofit? Is that considered the same thing?
No. The nonprofit would just be a true nonprofit, and the nonprofit would have to follow the or submit the separate forms outlined for nonprofits. Universities follow the forms as outlined for the universities.
Right. Perfect, perfect. And then my last question is a little bit more complicated. For the federal match that's required, we have a situation where we have a significant level of match that's associated with the project that we're trying to do. However, that match won't necessarily be spent within the two-year grant period. The question is, do we only list the portion of that match that will be spent during the two-year grant period, or can we list it all and just not put it in the forms? I'm trying to figure out how best to represent that.
So this is actually a really, really important question, and it gets to the heart of what is a match. So for EDA's purposes, EDA gives a grant, and that grant generally has to be met with a 50-50 match. It can go up to 80% as outlined in FFO. That match might be separate from the overall project amount. So you might, for example, have, if you're a university and you're putting in $500,000, the state is going to put in $500,000 as your match. Mm-hmm. That might be separate than perhaps, you know, another $2 million is going to go in to buy some specific equipment that's going to help your proof of concept center do something special or to do, you know, something really advanced. Mm-hmm. Your overall project in that case might be $3 million. Of which the EDA project cost would be $1 million, $500,000 that the EDA would spend, $500,000, that would be the technical approved match. Does that help clarify?
Yes. So do we only put the technical approved match on the forms?
Yes. And then project narrative, you could communicate overall, you know, what's going to happen. We definitely want to know the players in the big picture. But in the budget itself, in the budget forms, we want to know exactly what EDA is going to pay for and exactly what the match, which has to be for allowable costs. So, for example, you cannot use match for construction if construction is not a part of your scope of work or other things that might not be authorized under your scope of work. And it has to align with the exact project time period as outlined in your proposal. So if you're asking for a one-year grant for technical assistance, generally the matching share would be for the 1 year for some type of activity that would support that technical assistance, whether that's for printing and services, whether that's to facilitate broad meetings, whether that's for information sharing or best practices, whatever that would be. But it would have to be kind of analogous to the scope of work.
Great. Perfect. Thank you very much.
We have another question from Alex Kang. Your line is open.
Our two questions are, can we count like National Science Foundation funded IU CRC research initiatives as in-kind support, and are they eligible to receive EDA funds? And then what was the question?
So this is the question. It really depends on how that money is structured, where it comes from, and who it's coming to. Because we don't have all the details, we don't want to give you bad information, so we would recommend that you would contact your regional office. As a general rule, EDA cannot give money to other federal entities, and our funds can't be matched with other federal funds. There are exceptions. So, for example, CDBG funds can be used as match, but it's really important that it's case by case and that you're working with the regional office to make sure that you're that all the information is available before we give you an answer.
And then one more question from my colleague.
Yeah, the second question is just clarification on support for private entities. So is it possible for an incorporated for-profit company to apply for support, whether they wouldn't be directly receiving EDA funds, but they would be recipients of technical assistance, whether it's time on a prototyping machine or whatever it is, they would indirectly receive support, but it's not financial assistance.
So essentially what you're talking about is that a private firm or a private entity would be a beneficiary of the federal investment and the matching share. So in a sense, they would get to benefit, whether through, like you're saying, the time on the equipment or indirectly benefit from technical assistance that's provided to the proof of concept center to support job creation activities in that region. Is that correct?
Yes, it is correct. I'm referring to a specific point in the merit review criteria that leads me to believe that this is possible.
Yes.
That is under merit review criteria number 2, feasibility of implementation plan, bullet point number 3.
Yeah, and as you just communicated, or as we just clarified it, that is correct. It's really important here that this kind of gets back to the whole conversation we had earlier about eligibility and about the fact that for-profit entities cannot be eligible entities, cannot receive federal funds under this award. However, we would anticipate and almost expect that a for-profit entity in some capacity is going to be related or indirectly benefit as a beneficiary from the Proof of Concept Center in your region.
Right. They would be getting technical assistance flowing down through the eligible recipient, from the Proof of Concept Center.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
We have a question from Joe Wallach. Your line is open.
Yes. Our question has to do with some of the in-kind match that we're hoping to get, and I think we can. It's a very nice complex of buildings. It's perfect location-wise, size-wise, for a proof-of-concept center. But it's if you're requiring a resolution of the city council and the local airport, which are the two places that would need a resolution, the chances of us having all of that in place the 20th of July are less than 2%. However, I'm sure I can get a letter from them saying that if we're selected, that this is going to happen. How would you see that on the application if it's not a full-blown commitment, but it's a strong indication that there will be one?
So as a general rule, match needs to be available and committed at the time of the application. There are cases where, as you're saying, where you could get a letter indicating that it's coming. We would advise you to work with the regional office because there's a lot of kind of exogenous factors that we would need to be able to talk out to discuss how that would really interplay with your specific proposal. So in the interest of not giving you bad information, we want to reference you to the appropriate regional office outlined in the appendix.
Okay.
We have a question from William Endest. Your line is open.
Hi, this is Will Endes from Tech Columbus. I have actually 4 questions. The first one is that we are in the process of obtaining our SEDS, working with our district office. A couple of months away, we were advised by the district office to explain that in the proposal. And I'm wondering where. Is that part of the narrative?
I'm sorry. I didn't catch that whole question.
Sorry. We're working with the district office to complete our SEDS. We're a couple of months away as a region, and we were told by our district office to just explain that as a part of the proposal. My question is where do we do that in the narrative?
So it's an addenda item. On page 15, it says that projects must be consistent with the region's SEDS. So what I would do is kind of just put a statement in there saying that it's in progress and explain how it's consistent with the SEDS.
Right. And I think we, depending on the region, they've been willing to accept similar documents as the SEDS submitted in parallel.
Okay. Can we attach that document? It's not part of the narrative?
Yeah. So what I would recommend you do is as is stated on page 15, to really talk to your regional office representative on that. In some cases, if you're really close to publication, it might be good just to send a link if it's available. In other cases, they might ask you to actually just upload it and provide it so that if they don't have a copy of it in the region. What they're really going to be looking for is that there's some kind of statement that indicates that this is consistent with the direction that the region's heading, and that it's really building on assets that the region already has, that you're not trying to support a biochemistry proof of concept center in an area where there's no biochemistry inherent regional assets. So we definitely want to make investments that are going to be able to be successful and implementatable for the long term.
Okay, thank you. The second question is related. We're making a case for special need for the distressed area. Would that be done in the narrative?
Yes, and 8900 as well.
Okay. In Ohio, there is no single point of contact listed. How should we proceed with that form?
I think you can just put not applicable. Is that because it's only, you know, only if your state has a SWOT process you need to enter.
Okay. Two more quickies. These recordings, or this recording in the earlier session, are they available afterwards?
Which earlier session? The original informational seminars?
Yeah, June 18th.
Yeah, those should be on the EDA website shortly.
Okay, great, thank you. And last question, back to the private entity issue. So we're a venture development organization, and we're going to be helping private entities to achieve success, commercialization success. And we sometimes hire private entities to do that. So in this, we could see hiring a for-profit entity to prototype beta units for a for-profit startup. Does that violate what you said earlier with regard to for-profit entities?
Basically, any type of activity where a for-profit entity is going to be contracting on an award, number one, you need to make sure that you're following all the appropriate procurement regulations and rules to ensure that there's no uncompetitive situation, basically. If you know who I'll just leave it at that. Work with your regional office representative to define that if you have questions. If you are with a university or you are with a larger institution, reach out to your grant specialist or your contract specialist. Many of them are the experts and have done this many times before, and could save you a lot of time reaching out to them because they will often have all that information readily available.
Okay, thank you. That's it.
We have a question from Eduardo Gonzalez. Your line is open.
I have two questions. One of them is there a limit on the margins? 1 inch?
So page 14 does not say the margin, but however, recognize that the EDA is going to be printing this out. Anything outside of a normal margin will take us time to format, and we are not going to have the time to do that. So anything that's going to set it outside of a normal margin should be seen as not really acceptable to EDA.
What's recommended, the 1 inch?
A 1 inch would be preferable, no less than usually 0.7 is what you have to get it to print normal. If it's not printing normal, you're causing a lot of extra headache and heartache on our behalf. So 1 inch.
Okay. And then the second question is, for a purpose of regional collaboration, is there any way we can get the list of people that are on the call today?
Unfortunately, we can't really share that information, but you can email us at i6@eda.gov, and we can try to connect you with inquiries that we may have received, although I can't guarantee that, but we can certainly try.
The other thing you might be able to do is if you talk to your regional office representative, they've often been contacted by multiple applicants about similar ideas, and they can put you in touch with, depending on what your proposal is or your idea is, with other folks who may be appropriate partners or co-applicants or such who may help your application.
Okay, thank you.
We have a question from Robert Aldrich. Your line is open.
Hi, yes. This is regarding matching funds. We do a large business plan competition, and we have several corporate sponsors and philanthropic organizations give money for prizes and that kind of stuff, and we're planning on using some of that as match. My question is, some of those that we give to the top prize winners involve an element of a convertible note, which is paid back with interest and that kind of stuff, so there is a limited availability of risk. So my question is, can we use that part as match as well, where, you know, looking at page 13, it says it must be available as needed. So we do have a little element of risk with that portion. So my question is, the portion that's a note, can we use that as match?
Just 1 second on that answer as we confer.
Hi, we're just talk to your regional office contact. For EDA's matching requirement are that your match be available as needed, sort of not contingent. So talk to your regional office about that. That's not our typical structure for a match. So check with them and maybe email I6 as well, we'll talk about it.
Another thing is as you're talking to the regional offices, is that, you know, any match, as we talked about before, has to be related to the scope of work that you're providing. So any kind of things like that, you would have to be able to articulate how it's directly going to be related to the scope of work that you're asking for from EDA. So in some of those cases, that might inherently weed out some of the more creative loan options or commercial ventures, because it would be hard to see how that could actually be part of a approved scope of work in which EDA would pay for something and there would be a similar match. But, yeah, talk to your region.
Right, so the main reason for referring some of these questions to the regions is to give all of you time to explain the details of the situation. Some, as Hillary said, will work, some won't, and they'll be able to help over the next few days sort of resolve that. So thank you.
Thank you.
We have a question from Ali Thompson. Your line is open.
Yes. Is there a limit to the indirect cost rate?
So indirect cost rate must be approved by a federal cognizant agency. If it's approved by a federal cognizant agency, obviously EDA will accept it. A couple things to keep in mind is if you have a higher indirect cost rate, usually you have many things, including salaries, rent, computers, that kind of thing associated with it. So one big thing we're going to be looking for is to ensure there's not double counting, so that if personnel hours are included in the indirect cost, that they're not also being billed on line A of the 424A form. And essentially, we're looking for the best value to the federal government. So if you have a high indirect cost rate and you propose a great thing and you're not asking for a lot of money, then it might be as good of or better value than one that has a lower rate. So the rate itself is not necessarily the bad thing. What's important is your idea and your budget, and does it allow you to successfully accomplish your project.
Great. Thank you.
We have a question from Chris Carson. Your line is open.
Thank you. On page 21, there's a footnote, and it says applicants may not include costs related to venture capital activities. Is there a place to get clarification on what those kinds of activities might be? Or can you provide that information?
Sorry, I'm reading through this again really quickly. In general, this is related to the fact that matching share costs need to be eligible costs. So providing funding to, you know, in the venture capital context, providing funding directly to for-profits is not an eligible EDA cost, and so would not be an eligible match, or, you know, it just can't be part of the EDA budget. Such an activity could be a cost center outside of the EDA budget, but it just can't be included as a project cost.
And that's where, so essentially, in that case, it would be part of the total project cost, which would be different than either the EDA project cost or the matching cost. So if the EDA project cost is obviously what we pay for, the match is what you would be supported with, that might be something that's supporting the overall project, but is funded through either additional federal funds in a different place or other state funds or other private organizational funds.
Right, but outside of your budget on the SF424A or whatever that is.
So just to clarify, we received a question about universities that have set up their own venture capital funds and are investing in their I-6 companies. I would assume the same logic applies there, but that's where it is a nonprofit investing in the company. Is there anything different under that scenario or the same? Versus an outside investor who comes in, where it's a fairly clear distinction. If it's a university fund, what does that mean?
Yeah, this is where it kind of gets complicated. It depends
right.
on what the project is. If EDA is going to approve a scope of work that, say, in that case, provided technical assistance, then EDA would say EDA provided $500,000 to support the technical assistance and information sharing of the facilitators or the operators of the proof of concept center to support or implement best practices. Then the matching share would make perhaps come from the state, from local government, from other sources to support in some way that broad technical assistance. Mm-hmm. In that case, the loan activity would be kind of a broader share that would be outside either the EDA portion or the matching share. But it would be obviously really important to the overall success of the overall project and really important for us to know about in the narrative.
Right. But, you know, just in terms of also just remember EDA's conflict of interest requirement. So, you know, we don't want any sort of conflicts. Mm-hmm. I'll leave it at that. Talk to your regional office.
Thank you.
Sure.
And again, as a reminder, if you do have a question, please press star 1 now.
We have probably have time for a few more questions if we have them.
Like we do have one more coming in. Stand by. We have a question from Amy Hunter. Your line is open.
Hi, this is actually Erica Birch. I'm applying in collaboration with Amy Hunter. And we were just wondering, we were looking on page 23 of the program announcement, and it says that subject to the availability of the funding, winning applicants receive their grant award packages in September. Do we receive the funding in September, or is that just the award letter and the paperwork that we sign? And if so, when and how are funds dispersed throughout the project?
That's a great question. So the award letter, the award package, would be distributed in September, which means technically the funds are obligated. However, in order to be fully obligated, the award has to be countersigned within 30 days of receipt. And generally, there's a grant kickoff, in which case there is communication by both EDA and the grantee, reconciliation about the project scope of work, milestones, all that kind of stuff. Drawdowns or disbursements of funds happen after that date, so we would not envision any funds to be drawn down until after the grant kickoff meeting.
Okay, thank you.
We have a question from Mary Jeffries. Your line is open.
Thank you. To clarify the question before the last question, we are planning to use EDA funds in the following way as one of the things we're going to do, which is if we have a promising technology for proof of concept funding or a promising company for seed funding, we were going to have EDA funds dispersed from the applicant to match funds dispersed from the university. Is that okay to do, or does that run into that?
What is your scope of work, though? What you're talking about is the payment, which is not...
We're talking about if we identify, you know, a great technology or a great startup, can we use EDA funding to match university funding to provide seed or proof of concept funding?
Proof
of concept funding, do you mean internal grant internally to the PI or to the researcher to study it some more, research it on that side of things, or do you mean actual equity investment?
Actual proof of concept study, and then seed funding would be actual investment.
So you're talking about both?
I'm talking about both, yes.
So the study funds are allowed, the equity funds are not allowed.
And this gets to be really critical to really flesh out the scope of work, which is separate from how the funds get distributed. So if you can first think about, you know, what do I want to do? Am I providing technical assistance? Am I facilitating coordination? Am I identifying best practices or supporting implementation of best practices? Then what is my match going to be? And then there's the conversation about, okay, how do funds get distributed? And there's a piece of how does EDA distribute funds to the applicant, which is generally done on a reimbursement basis. It can be done in advancement in limited cases, but generally done on a reimbursement basis to only the applicant. And the applicant would pay either the subawardees or the contractors as authorized and allowed under the agreed-upon grant award. But those are kind of two separate things. That's just important to know.
Okay. So we would not be able to seed anybody using EDA money. Okay. All right. Okay, thank you.
Our final question comes from Eduardo Gonzalez. Your line is open.
Just to clarify, on so the start date on the scope of work should reflect what date?
Sorry, I missed that.
So the start date on the scope of work, what day should that reflect?
So generally, awards start within 30 days after they are accepted.
October 1st?
So if you assume that the grants are going to be mailed out by the end of September or the middle of September, they will be countersigned by you by the middle to end of October, and a kickoff meeting could be scheduled within 2 weeks after that, say. So you're really looking at the end of October, 1st of November, really before the project would get kicked off. Very much.
Okay, so...
However, that does not mean that there's no activity that can start till then. Mm-hmm. You could definitely start if there's pre-work in terms of whether it's, you know, a little bit of research, a literature review, best practice identification, that kind of stuff. If you have things like that that are critical to your scope of work, there are preliminary things that can be done between the date that you officially get your award and the date that the kickoff meeting would happen. But it would just be... really important to make sure that that's clearly stated in your application and that you're working with your regional office to identify the things that would make sense to have that structured in that way.
Right, and to make sure those costs are going to be
available.
Yeah.
Okay.
Great. Well, with that, I want to thank everyone for joining the call. I particularly want to thank Delisle, Hillary, and Jamie for spending the last hour answering these questions. As we discussed a few times, many of your questions are quite complex and require more time than this call allowed for, so I would strongly suggest you continue to be in touch with us both here in Washington as well as the regional offices. If you need to reach us, you can reach us at i6@eda.gov by email, and you can also look on the FFO for your regional contacts, and the FFO, again, if you haven't seen it, lists the states within each region and the contacts there and follow up with them. We're constantly circulating a lot of the common questions and discussing them with each other, and so I believe you'll get the answers that you need. Once again, the deadline is July 20th, and we have a lot of information on the website related to the concept, the FFO and other things. We urge you to look at that and be in touch as much as you need to through the deadline. So thank you all very much for joining us.
That does conclude today's conference. Thank you for participating. You may disconnect at this time.